sports world keeps on turning. That's why we bring you Saturday Sports Talk. Kick your weekend off with the week's top headlines in sports. Get in the game by calling 656-9900 or toll free at 1-866-656-9900. Star 99 is a free call for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. This is Saturday Sports Talk. Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Hour number two of Saturday Sports Talk begins. 656-9900 if you want to join us. With Eric Kane, I'm Joel Silverberg. We're taking applications for a new producer, if anybody's interested.
I saw Sam coming in here. Maybe he can just slot in and we can relieve Logan Ward of his duties. Yeah, we have to mute Eric's mic every now and then. Ainge, that is, when he gets on a rant, but don't do that to us.
All right. So we've talked Tennessee basketball. We've got Peter Burns from ESPN, the SEC Network, coming up in the next segment, about 25 minutes. But for right now, it's 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning, so let's rip it.
What's really grinding my gears, I want to piggyback on the social media thing.
It is the absolute worst thing that has came along in the last 20 years.
I don't need this. I don't want this.
I'm sorry that we didn't break down Tennessee's second string linebacker for the 18th time this summer. Those are my grievances, Joel. I feel much better now, and I appreciate the forum.
Let's pump the brakes.
Brian Aiken's getting worked up over there.
Let me tell you. I followed it. I've looked it up.
The way you had Alabama on the ropes for the last 2 years in the national championship and the SEC championship to punch your ticket for another chance.
Georgia decided we're going to sit here and tweet about it. So I don't want to hear anything else about it. You swelled head fart knockers.
All right. Every Saturday morning at 9 o'clock, play Rip It. And now it's time to lay some lumber. Eric Kane, you're leading off. What do you got?
Well, it's that best time of the year. No, not the Daytona 500. No, not NBA All-Star Weekend. No, pitchers and catchers report. They've reported. It's you know, every year around Valentine's Day, the first step towards spring training and baseball season. So for the past 6-7 weeks, you know, after the commissioner came out and confirmed the sign-stealing scandal for the Houston Astros and the World Series championship 2017 season, Jim Crane of the Houston Astros owner said that, hey, we're going to come out. We're going to make a statement. We're going to come out and address this at spring training. And so you've had time to kind of get your PR team together and to have a plan for what you were going to say when you met with the media. And again, I gave a lot of credit to Jim Crane, because that joke of a commissioner for Major League Baseball, Rob Manfred, came in and said, we're going to suspend Jeff Lue now. We're going to suspend AJ Hinch for a year. We're going to do all this. And Jim Crane was like, no, we'll go ahead and fire them because you couldn't do it. So I gave him a lot of credit, and I still think that's the right move. But this is the owner of the Houston Astros. So on Thursday, you know, the team's getting there. A lot of big Jose Altuve, Carlos Correa, Alex Bregman. And then Jim Crane really kind of stole the show. And so the team is sitting there meeting with the media, and they came out and wanted to apologize for what happened during that 2017 season. But I mean, it was so bad. It was like one of those bad car wrecks that you drive by and you don't want to look, but you keep looking. It was so bad you couldn't turn away. Listen to what Jim Crane, again, Houston Astros owner, said about what went down, about what he thinks and then what he didn't think, and he gets caught in a web of his own lies. Listen to what Jim Crane says about the whole sign-stealing scheme and his impact on the game of baseball and its season that ultimately resulted in a World Series championship.
You know, our opinion is, you know, that this didn't impact the game. We had a good team. We won the World Series, and we'll leave it at that.
Jim, when talking about the Yankees there, did you say you feel like this didn't impact the game? And what do you mean by that?
I didn't say it didn't impact the game. You know, our opinion is, you know, that this didn't impact the game. I didn't say it didn't impact the game.
So he said it didn't impact the game. And then 55 seconds later, someone calls him out and says, well, what do you mean when you said it didn't impact the game? That being the sign stealing scheme. impacting the game of baseball, meaning wins and, oh, you won a World Series championship. What do you mean by that? Oh, I didn't say it didn't impact the game. No, yes, you did. You literally, less than a minute ago, you said it didn't impact the game. So Jim Crane, a complete fold. Awful. Okay. Jose Altuve gets up there and spews for 33 seconds. Jose Altuve for 33 seconds gets up there and says, yeah, well, we're sorry, but really we're focusing on, we're going to bring another World Series championship back to Houston. Jose Altuve was one of the most adored and one of the most loved fans in all of baseball right now. And now he literally might set the Major League Baseball record for hit by pitches in a season. He literally might. Alex Bregman looked to be like the only guy in all this that showed a little signs of remorse. And that being Alex Bregman, who Stone Cold wouldn't say a word 2 or 3 weeks ago. Carlos Correa came out and defended Carlos Beltran, saying that, you know, no, there was a report by The Athletic earlier in the week saying Carlos Beltran would intimidate younger players. And if they wouldn't follow their lead, they'd have to get out of the clubhouse. And he defended Carlos Beltran for that. The whole thing is just awful. Point being, you had weeks and weeks and weeks to get your whole department to come together, come out and say, yes, this is what happened. We did it. We feel bad. We all just want to move on. And we are sorry for what we did for the game of baseball. But no, you come in there, completely say, you know what happened, but no, it's no big deal. We had a good team. We still won the World Series, and that's that. Complete joke. It starts at the top, Jim Crane. Your public relations department's a complete joke. The Houston Astros, what you're doing around the baseball community right now, making no friends, because, hey, there are, you know, guys on this roster right now, you're not going to finish your season. You're not going to finish your careers in Houston, likely. You're going to go somewhere else, and, you know, you are making enemies around the game of baseball. And baseball is a fraternity. You know, every professional sports league, it's a fraternity. It's a close-knit group. And so this is a horrific situation right now. And it's a joke. It's embarrassing. And, you know, I want to say that it's time for it to be over with, but it's not. This is going to continue on. This is going to be a main storyline for all the 2020 season. Now, a hot take here, too, and I'm not a guy that tries to go in the here and the now, but I think what happened with the Houston Astros in 2017, 2018, and 2019, it's so bad for the sport of baseball that the punishment needs to be so bad that no one even consider ever doing it again. I think what should have happened, I think the World Series title should have been stripped. And that's drastic, I know, but, and I hate it for the fan base, but that's my opinion. I think the World Series title should have been stripped because it's that big on the game of baseball. So point being, Jim Crane, awful. If you didn't see the press conference Thursday, it's all over social media. Go to YouTube, type it in, watch some more of these interviews. It was a train wreck. It was so bad, and it was just the great start for the Houston Astros here in 2020.
So did anybody watch the Arkansas-Missouri game last Saturday? You shouldn't have. Or Missouri-Texas A&M. Or no, it was Arkansas-Missouri. Excuse me. Arkansas-Missouri basketball game last Saturday. You shouldn't have, because it wasn't great basketball.
I was watching Duke Carolina.
Yeah, as we all should have been.
Yeah.
So the SEC Network has the call. And, you know, the SEC Network does the, you know, they do the Friday night heights, the gymnastic meets and everything like that.
Yeah.
For women's gymnastics in the SEC.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So Richard Cross is on the call with SEC Network analyst Barry Booker. And Cross is doing what he's supposed to do. He's talking about the SEC gym meets coming up on Friday and, you know, previewing them and how they're coming up on this upcoming Friday. So Valentine's Day. So he makes a comment about how, hey, it could be a great Valentine's Day activity. Barry Booker says, I mean, go hang out with the ladies. I mean, I want to go see some scantily clad girls. To which Richard Cross then tries to make the situation better by saying, no, it's one of the best family atmospheres that you'll find in college athletics, because Barry, we're trying to market this to children. Barry Booker, what an idiot. Why would you say something like this? A, talking about, first of all, you're talking about college athletes, you're talking about amateur athletes, so you're not even talking about pros, which wouldn't make it better, but you're talking about amateur young female athletes who are already dealing a lot within their sport with everything that's happened with Larry Nassar in recent years, if you haven't been paying attention, to go out and say something like this. It's inappropriate, falls so short of a professional standard. The SEC and Commissioner Greg Sankey have already come out, released statements saying that the comments were inappropriate. They don't meet the expectations that we have for the SEC network. Women's gymnastics student athletes deserve our support for many reasons. A former SEC gymnast, Sydney McGlone, has already ripped Booker a lot. And he's gone to complain to the Washington Post. Just there's no place for that in broadcasting. And you and I, we're play-by-play guys. We've done broadcasting. We enjoy being on the call at games. There's a lot that you would do for a job like this. Don't do something stupid and screw it up, because I'm Barry Booker and I work for the SEC Network, and I'm going to talk about how I want to see scantily clad girls. And I get that he meant it to be funny. You've just got to be better than that in 2020. And this is coming from somebody that hates political correctness. There's nothing politically correct about this. You can't bring up something like this in a really insensitive manner during a pretty sensitive situation where the Larry Nassar deal is not that far off in the rearview mirror. That's Rip It. Play it every Saturday morning in the 9 o'clock hour right here on Saturday Sports Talk on The Sports Animal. Peter Burns coming up in a little more than 10 minutes. ESPN, the SEC Network, talking about the scenario revolving around Mel Tucker leaving Colorado for Michigan State, what that could mean for the college football playoff in the next 10 years, what Tennessee football looks like going into 2020, and then, of course, Tennessee and South Carolina tonight. Had some comments about that as well, but we go to the phones at 656-9900 and talk to Roger. Roger, good morning. You're on Saturday Sports Talk.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. I love the Rip It segment. I'm able to catch it almost every Saturday. It's awesome.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. I agree with you about this Booker guy, man. I've heard him say several things that are suggestive and weird, and I don't know why he's still on the air, but I bet if somebody took the time to, like, watch all his games and record the audio, I bet you would have a very interesting mixtape, and he does not need to be calling games, man. I totally agree with you.
Yeah, I think the fact that there are former SEC athletes that are still relatively young, like I believe McGlone is actually a recent graduate of Arkansas, but the fact that there are athletes speaking out about it now, I think that's going to get the SEC's attention.
I certainly hope so. That wasn't actually why I called, but I do appreciate your take on that. But this baseball thing, and admittedly, I have not been an active fan of baseball, and this will tell you how long an old guy can hold a grudge, but probably since the strike, pre-Cal Ripken, I mean, and the streak and all that, that's how long I have turned away from Major League Baseball, because I think it's just a bunch of crap. Now, I like to go watch the Smokies play minor league baseball. I love the game itself. But I wonder, and I'm just going to put this out there and hang up and listen to you guys comment about it, but I wonder if why the players aren't as recalcitrant as I feel and we all feel they should be is because everybody does it, everybody knows it, and because of this ridiculous masculine athletic code of honor, They're afraid to rat each other out, because we'll see how bad this wound is on baseball, that everybody is doing this kind of thing, and the Astros just happen to be really good and they happen to get caught. I'll hang up and listen to your comments.
All right, Roger, appreciate the call. I kind of said this with the Hall of Fame situation. I feel like baseball is constantly trying to stick its nose up and hold this holier than thou type mantra with its own sport, because, you know, it feels like, oh no, only very, very special athletes can be unanimous Hall of Fame selection. I just feel like there's a number of things when it comes to baseball, like, you know, we act as if that no, you know, we've got all the guys that are doping. They're, you know, we're making sure they're not getting into Hall of Fame. You're telling me that there's not a single Hall of Famer right now that's enshrined in Cooperstown that didn't take steroids at some point during their career? And maybe they just didn't get caught. I just feel like baseball is a little bit more, you know, I feel like what we're seeing on the surface isn't what's really happening on the inside.
David Ortiz is going to be a future Hall of Famer, and he was indicted in a couple of reports, but he's going to be probably a second ballot Hall of Famer here second or third ballot Hall of Famer when his time's up. But anyway, point being, I think there's a couple of things, and I appreciate the phone call. Everyone signs deals. Again, I mentioned this earlier. You know, I played football early on in my collegiate career. When I wasn't, you know, playing a lot on defense, I would try to sign steal. I would try to look at the guy on the opposing sideline who's signaling in the defensive calls, and I try to pick it up. Eric Ainge talked about doing that You know, before that's gamesmanship, that's football. You know, that's every part of it. Now, if we were sitting there videotaping that and then going home and studying and breaking it down and then coming back at practice and saying, okay, you know, I got that. That's another thing. And that's essentially what I would compare to what's going on with the Houston Astros. Everyone sign steals. Everyone sign stealed in baseball. Hank Aaron said, you know, when we play, we sign steal. You know, everyone still signs. That's why you're constantly changing things up. And if you ever watch a baseball game and you see the catcher go through and recycle his pitches and everything, and that why there's many conversations when you go out to the mound, because you're constantly changing your signs and all that. So that's a part of the game of baseball, and it always has been. But when you are incorporating a video monitor and you are using radio signals, and then you are literally signaling it down from one part of the part to another, and then you are beating on a trash can to alert hitters, you know, with a verbal cue essentially at the plate. I mean, that's taken it so far. And so can I sit here and say definitively that there's not that the Houston Astros are the only team that has done something like that? No, I can't do that. But I don't think that, you know, that seeing the reaction from Cody Bellinger, seeing the reaction from Whit Merrifield, seeing the reaction from, you know, guys across the league, it's the gamesmanship and seeing what the Houston Astros did and then went beyond what the norm is right there. That's where the problem lies right now. And so, you know, when you see some of the reactions from around the league, that's what tells me that, like, hey, this is not normal. And so that's where I think the difference is too. But I mean, you know, sign stealing, absolutely. Everyone does it. Everyone does it, but not everyone's doing it with a video monitor and beating on a trash can.
I mean, you're seeing it over in UEFA soccer right now, Manchester City, for the inaccurate information with their finances that they had been dealing with. I mean, they've been fined over $30 million, but they've also been banned from European competition for 2 years.
Did you see Buffalo Wild Wings step in and say, they quoted that tweet or whatever, said, yeah, that's how you do, that's how you punish cheaters.
Yeah. But I mean, think about it. It's, you know, well, what did Major League Baseball really do to punish the Astros?
You're going to say that they docked $5 million. Okay, whatever. Chump change. Don't care. Taking away first and second round picks for the next 2 years.
So the punishments that were announced like weeks ago.
Yeah, yeah. Significantly, like that's going to hurt. But again, if I can win a World Series title and give up my first and second round pick in baseball, that's big for the next 2 years. But I get a World Series title, sign me up every day. And then you fire suspend your GM and your manager for a season. That's all Major League Baseball did. And that's a joke, an absolute joke. That's it. And so the Major League Baseball is still doing an investigation on the 2018 Boston Red Sox. The Red Sox didn't wait around, went ahead and parted ways with Alex Cora. But remember, the Red Sox won the World Series title in 2018 under first-year manager Alex Cora, who was bench coach for the Houston Astros in 2017. So there's still investigations going on, but the punishment for the Houston Astros, that's all said and done. I mean, it's over with.
Yeah, I mean, in the last 7 years, no team has won multiple World Series titles within 4 years of each other. Now, you had the Giants doing it back to back to back, but the Giants won their most recent one in 2014. Before that, the Red Sox won it in 2013. Then the Red Sox won it again in 2018. You have all these different World Series winners. You've got the Royals, the Cubs, the Astros, the Nationals. My point being is that it's not like there's a team like the Patriots right now. The Giants kind of had it going for a while, but if you win a World Series, there's not this immediate expectation that you have to win one in the next 4 or 5 seasons. That's just been the trend of Major League Baseball for the most part.
Unless you're a Cubs fan.
Yeah.
And you win 108 years without it, and then you get spoiled, and you get mad, and then you get selfish.
But that's neither here nor there. But my point is that if that's the only punishment that you have to suffer through, you're doing it in a heartbeat.
Absolutely. 100%.
Five million bucks and a couple draft picks for a guaranteed World Series? Okay, that sounds like a deal. What franchise in baseball isn't taking that?
And the sad thing about it is Houston was getting credited for doing it the right way. You know, these guys, Bregman, Altuve, Correa, like homegrown, drafted, groomed, homegrown, brought up. Houston went through years and years and years of 100 loss seasons, and then started to turn it around. And again, undoubtedly a talented team. Could they have won the whole thing without sign stealing? Probably. I mean, they're that good, but you can't sit here and tell me, Jim Crane, that didn't have an impact on the game or the season. I mean, come on. So it's just, it's ridiculous to me. It's absolutely ridiculous to me. And kind of Thursday just really, I mean, Thursday was bad. The PR around the sports world was so bad. I don't know how the organization is going to recover from that. I mean, that was so bad.
Well, I think they'll recover by Major League Baseball kind of allowing them to recover by not hitting them with that hard of a punishment. Yeah. I think that's just kind of what it is. But we appreciate the thoughts and the calls. And again, we will talk to Peter Burns of ESPN and the SEC Network coming back. Tennessee football, what does he think about the Tennessee basketball game tonight against South Carolina? College football playoff, what sort of impact could be in the future with what's happening right now in the Pac-12? Peter Burns will talk to us about that next. Coming up on Saturday Sports Talk with Eric Kane, I'm Joel Silverberg. It's Saturday Sports Talk on FM 99.1, The Sports Animal. Saturday Sports Talk rolls on. We'll take you up till 10 o'clock. 5:30 is when pregame coverage will begin on the Vol Network for Tennessee and South Carolina tonight. You can hear that right here on our station, 99.1 FM, 990 AM, The Sports Animal. And be sure to tune in for tip-off at 6 o'clock. Bob Kessling, Burt Burkamp will be on the call. John Wilkerson will handle all your studio updates for you. Congrats, by the way, to the Tennessee baseball team. Wilkerson was not on the call. He'll be on the call for a lot this season. Eric Kane, you got to see Tennessee shut out Western Illinois yesterday, so a good performance from Tennessee. But yesterday I had the opportunity to talk to Peter Burns of ESPN, the SEC Network, Sirius XM Radio. I talked to him a lot about Tennessee football and basketball, but started the conversation regarding some comments that he had about the situation in college football with the Pac-12 from Mel Tucker moving from Colorado to Michigan State. Here's the conversation with Peter Burns. You had some strong thoughts on Twitter after Mel Tucker left Colorado for the Michigan State job. It's bigger than just one coaching change, it seems like. What sort of problem does this present for the Pac-12 conference in college football?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of eye-opening. When you look at any point, you know, are any of our coaches safe to be poached by, you know, a bigger program for the Big Ten or specifically, you know, the SEC? I mean, we just saw that with Mike Leach going from Washington State where, you know, they liked him there. And then, you know, Mississippi State said, hey, we want you to come over here. And boom, he leaves. Same thing with Mel Tucker. And honestly, I think it poses a big question about, you know, the viability of the Pac-12 really being a normal and competitive college football conference going forward. I mean, you know, right now, if you look at the money that, you know, they have in that Tennessee gets, that Big Ten schools get, SEC schools get, you know, it's upwards of around $50 million a year, while these other schools are only getting $30 million a year in the Pac-12. So, you know, you times years, that's $120 million. I mean, you guys know, $120 million in your bank, in your budget, you're going to be able to do a whole lot more things about hiring better coaches and putting better facilities and better nutrition bars at universities. So, again, I'm really worried by, you know, what happens, not necessarily for the SEC. It's actually good news because now that means, hey, anytime we need something, we just go to the Pac-12 and rate it almost like it's a minor league of college football season now.
What impact could that have on the college football playoff?
Yeah, it's a really smart question because that's what they're trying to figure out right now is the bigger piece of it. I think that's why all the coaches or, you know, other conferences that have been left out of the playoff right now, they look at it and go, man, we need to expand past 8 teams or past 4 teams to get to 8 because if we don't, will we ever get a piece of the major money, which is college football playoff money? And frankly, I mean, it's hard to think that's the case. I mean, look at how many years the Pac-12 has been left out now. And I don't see them having a situation where they could close that gap. You know, I mean, it's one thing going, okay, we'll just sign a new deal, and, you know, now we're making $45 million a school versus, you know, 30. Well, there's no one magic bullet that the Pac-12 can have. If anything, their product is being devalued more and more because that it's not, frankly, watched, nobody cares about it, and the fans aren't showing up. So, if that's the case, you got to make some drastic moves. If not, then it's really just going to be the Big Ten, the SEC, and then, you know, one-offs like Oklahoma and, you know, and Clemson here and there.
Talking to Peter Burns of ESPN, the SEC Network, more specifically looking into the SEC, what do you think of the job that Jeremy Pruitt has done in 2 seasons at Tennessee, the turnaround from this past season, and the expectations moving into year 3?
Yeah, it's kind of crazy because you would have called me up, you know, after week 2, and you would have been like, what do you think of this guy? You know, a turnaround. I'd be like, huh? Have you watched what's happening? But, I mean, again, I think the turning point of this program under Pruitt was after the Alabama loss. They, 2 things. One, they felt like they weren't that far away. You know, they could compete with an Alabama team And the second thing is that after Gary Taylor went rogue, I think Jeremy Pruitt had a big moment where he could just really kind of thrown Gary Taylor in the bus, and his teammates did. Instead, he circled the wagon and said, listen, I didn't recruit a bunch of you guys, but you know what? Let's pull together from this and let's finish the season strong. And he went to bat for Jared. And I think that spoke volumes about what kind of man and coach that Coach Pruitt was. And all of a sudden, it kind of just lit a fire under everybody. And that was huge news for this team. I mean, they had, you know, some injury concerns and trying to figure things out the first two games. But, man, I mean, now they have the second longest winning streak in college football outside of LSU. They have a great recruiting classes, or a great recruiting class exactly where they needed to, especially in the trenches. And they flipped a couple of playmakers that, you know, if you're a Vol fan now, this is as good as it's been since, you know, probably, what was it, 2015 or so, whenever you thought, you know, that season that Butch Jones was going to really take college football by storm.
It was a lot of coming off the bench and start and sit situations for quarterback Jared Garantano back in 2019. What do you make of Tennessee's quarterback situation moving forward?
That's the question. I mean, Brian Maurer, and then obviously, you know, you got the big recruit. I think it's one of the things where he works best when he has to compete for the job, you know, and it's not one of these situations where it's like, hey, he's going to get his feelings hurt. I mean, he knows, hey, listen, if you're not good enough, you're going to sit on the bench. I think that's an important lesson for Pruitt to teach these kids, is that, hey, listen, this is not just your spot. I mean, we're competing all up and down the field. If you're not good enough, we're going to get somebody else. So I think that's one of the biggest question marks, because I've seen Gary Campbell at a good clip, and he can win you games. I've also seen him make some bonehead decisions that he has to clean up. And so, you know, it'd be one thing, when we saw Brian Maurer when he was healthy, he made some great throws, but he also had some issues. So I still think it's a deal that the spring is huge for both of these guys, or all three of them, and we probably won't know a starter until probably, 2 weeks before the season starts in fall.
Let's move on to college basketball. And again, talking to Peter Burns of ESPN and the SEC Network. Tennessee, as expected, has taken a step back this year after losing so many pieces from a year ago. Where does Rick Barnes' program stand right now during this transitional rebuilding year?
Yeah, I mean, you know, and after you lose so much, and then really it's the Lamonte Turner injury that really kind of hurt everything, because now all of a sudden you're asking Fulkerson to play a bunch of minutes. You're asking, you know, Vescovi to really step up and be a leader. And I feel like in a weird way, I didn't expect this year's team, after losing Admiral and Grant and all those, you know, Jordan Bone, all those great players, to be a contender. But so what it's done is it's forced a lot of kids to grow up in overnight and play some more minutes and learn how, you know, what he has in his team. So, you know, listen, I mean, they're a dangerous squad, but I think they're very streaky. I'd like to see Jordan Bowden, you know, get back to his form when he's full of confidence, and we haven't seen a ton of that yet. But when he does, they're you know, combined with what does, is I think all college basketball Hall of Fame coach, they're good. I think next year they can be great, mostly because they're playing a bunch of guys that need that time, and they're learning how to win here in the SEC.
And so with this matchup coming up with South Carolina on Saturday night, both teams really have a lot of work to do, but is there still some significant bubble positioning to be had for either side, whoever wins this game on Saturday?
Yeah, I mean, Tennessee obviously has to make a run. I mean, you look at seven or six games left in the season, in the SEC season. I mean, you virtually almost have to win out and not go 6-1 just to start rising up and getting your net rankings, because that's what hurts this league this year, is that you don't have so many top 25 teams. You don't have so many quote unquote tournament teams. So even when you win in conference, it's not really helping your net ranking that the committee looks at. And I look at it from the other side. This is why this game against Frank Martin squad is huge, because they might be playing the fourth best basketball in the conference right now. I mean, you know, everyone's been trying to find that fourth spot because Auburn, Kentucky, and LSU are so good. But Mississippi State hasn't taken it. Arkansas is dealing with Isaiah Joe's injury. You know, Alabama is hit or miss. To me, South Carolina and how Jermaine Cousinard and you know, A.J. Lawson starting to come together, and Mike Cotsard, it's just the way that Frank plays that defensive, hard-nosed basketball. I think this would be a monster win for Barnes if they're able to go and beat South Carolina. I think it's probably playing as hot as anyone.
So the Gamecocks, too, have won 7 of their last 9 since the last time these two teams met. You kind of teased this on Twitter earlier in the week, but you had some really positive thoughts about Frank Martin. What has impressed you about the job that he's done this year and how he's gotten so much out of his team in the last 5 weeks?
I think the best thing that I see with, you know, and it's tough in this age where you get so many AAU players and a lot of guys that have skill, but they're not refined. I think the best attribute that Frank Martin has is I really do firmly believe that as soon as a kid gets to South Carolina, he becomes better. You know, scenario, when he got there, he became a better player under Frank Martin. And I think that's what we're seeing out of Cousinard and even A.J. Lawson late into the season, is the fact that as the season gets, you know, longer and longer and more games underneath their belt, it's not like the kids have checked out. It's not as if the kids are tired. What ends up happening is that the kids have just learned how to play within Frank's system, and Frank does a good job of X's and O's, and most importantly, kind of knowing the characters of his team and how to press the right buttons. And the one thing you know when you face South Carolina is you're in for a fight, man, because that's just the mentality that Frank Martin has. You look at the run that they made in the Final Four a couple of years ago. They had some very good. You know, P.J. Dozier was pretty good, but they were elite. They weren't great. It wasn't 5 McDonald's All-Americans like Kentucky normally trots out there, but he knew how to press the right buttons, and I think that's why I'm always really impressed by the teams, especially late into the season, that Frank Martin puts together.
I think maybe they've been forgotten a little bit because of what happened in the non-conference schedule. If you take away the losses to Stetson and Boston University, I mean, we're probably talking about a team that has a really, really good chance, if not a lock, to make the NCAA tournament, right?
Yeah, and especially you look at in a couple of years ago, they were on the outside looking in, and they, Frank thought they should have got in. And then the year they went to the Final Four, I mean, listen, they were kind of on the cusp of not even getting into the tournament, and then they caught fire. I think having that helps the brand. I think coaches and the selection committee know who Frank Martin is. I think that also helps. But again, I go back and look at whenever Cousinard hit the game winner against Kentucky, it kind of felt like all of a sudden this team knew that they had an opportunity to do something special if they got it together because they had enough talent. And, you know, that's why Saturday has really intriguing matchups. Like, you know, South Carolina, Tennessee is really intriguing. Mississippi State, Arkansas is really going to be interesting to me. LSU, Alabama. I mean, like all games coming up this weekend, while there's not this huge marquee game, it's going to be a lot of win or go home when it comes to conference, you know, tournament bids.
Peter Burns, VSPN, the SEC Network. Peter, last thing, we'll get you out of here. The game coming up at 6:00 Eastern time on Saturday. What does Tennessee need to do to have success against South Carolina on the road?
Yeah, I mean, I think for that, it's a matter of staying out of foul trouble, and because they like to play physical, and you know, it looks like Fulkerson was under the weather a little bit, and my goodness, he's been playing some great minutes. And I think it's two things. One, Fulkerson has to stay out of foul trouble. Just no dumb fouls. Like, if you're physical, like, get it. But just, you can't just get caught slipping because they need his presence, and he's been a difference maker. The other thing, too, is Viscovi is, you know, it's a hot or cold shooter. You got to take care of the ball. And I think that's the one thing that he's learning a little bit more of the style of play here in the SEC and who's he going up against, because I think he's extremely talented. He reminds me of, like, a fun Manu Ginobili-type player. When he gets it going, he gets it going. But I covered Manu with the Spurs, and it was a lot of turnovers and bad spots. And I think that's the one thing for Santiago that he's got to make sure, you know, if they don't do that, Fulkerson doesn't stay out of trouble, I think it honestly ends up being a pick 'em type game.
He's at Peter Burns, ESPN on Twitter, ESPN, the SEC Network, SEC This Morning on SiriusXM, and then Best Week Ever on ESPN Radio. Peter, really appreciate the time. Thank you so much. Enjoy all the college basketball this week, and hopefully we can talk to you again in the future.
Go Vols, and next time I'm in town, man, we got to grab a beer for sure.
So Peter Burns, ESPN, the SEC Network, SiriusXM Radio, appreciate him taking some time yesterday to talk to us, previewing Tennessee, South Carolina, some positive things to say about South Carolina's program and what Frank Martin has done with that team. And he brought up a good point. They suffered some bad losses in non-conference, but that team usually plays better towards the end of the year. Frank Martin's going to get a lot out of his team. And so while Tennessee beat South Carolina at home the first time around, this is probably the second easiest game remaining on Tennessee's schedule. Volunteers need to make sure that, and that just shows how tough Tennessee's remaining schedule is, but Volunteers need to show that they can go in and find a way to get a gritty road win away from Thompson Bowling Arena.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. I mean, the schedule
this last little stretch of the season. Again, you still have two against Auburn. You've got Kentucky. You've got Florida. And then you have another game against Arkansas. So, you know, this week, South Carolina, you know, this week, Vanderbilt, these are games that you need to have in the worst way because you're going to take some lumps between now and the end of the regular season. So take care of business today against a team that you've already beaten. You know, it was close, but you've beaten this team before, so you know a way to attack it and see where you land at the end of two periods.
656-9900 if you want to get in under the wire. We'll come back and wrap up today's edition of Saturday Sports Talk next with Eric Kane. I'm Joel Silverberg on FM 99.1, the Sports Animal.